Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Lords of Limited. My name is Ben Warney, and joining me on the line, as always, Mr. Ethan Sultai Devotee Sachs. Ethan, that's my guess as your clan identifier. Is that the clan that you would identify with the most?
You don't know me at all.
I don't know you at all. It's not Sultai Devotee. It's Teemer.
No, I think it's Teemer or Jeskai. Like I haven't played Sultai. I think not, basically
No. Not in this format. Like just as a magic essence.
Oh, as a magic essence.
Which animal would you be? Your favorite type of question.
Yeah, this is my favorite type of question. I would say Sultai or Jeskai is probably good. So we'll say you got it right. Well, but it's really, it's not like none of the above. It's Jund. Jund is my essence of
sure.
Of
I agree that Jund is your essence. I agree that Jund is your essence, but that's not an option for this format. I was trying to keep it on theme.
Okay. Yeah. Sultai is good. Sultai is good. Sorry to derail. It's a great setup. I am a Sultai devotee at heart, a 2-1 death toucher. How about you? What are you? You're Jeskai.
How well do you know me? What do you think?
I think you're Jeskai. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. I'm Jeskai. 100%.
Yeah, for sure. What about the world of Jeskai appeals to you? Is it the counter magic? Because I feel like part of your essence is being warm and cozy, and there's no Thoughtseize variants in Jeskai to be able to know what's going on with your opponent's hand.
I like the counter magic. I like this. I like the controlling nature of it. I like the burn. This goes back to when I was a kid, like way before the podcasting days, like going to the local card shop. I entered my constructed tournament with my 60 card like counter burn deck, you know, like it was just all counter spells and red burn spells and a couple. I was playing Is It Prowess before Is It Prowess was cool.
Oh yeah, we got some stuff to check in on, buddy. How's the format been going for you this week? Any new revelations?
Yeah, it's been going really well. This format is coming up for me. The stonks are rising. I'm kind of a believer, not that this is a great format or anything, but certainly has gone on a journey from like week one. I was like, oh my lord, how do I have to play this format for 2 months? To like, I'm actively seeking out drafts in all of my free time now, which is, I think, a huge turnaround for me from how I felt about it week one. I think I'm coming to appreciate that it does have a lot more hidden diversity. Like, I think there's surface level. It's very easy to draft the format surface level and say, well, either be Boros or be Teemer or be five color something, soup, nonsense, whatever. Like, there's three decks in the format. But I think as you really start to dial in, or at least for me, as I've started to feel like I really have dialed in on cards power level correctly, I feel like that's opening up a lot of niche archetypes for me that feel really rewarding to find that in the draft in my seat. And I still, whatever, we're 3 weeks in now, or we're only 2 weeks in, I don't know. It feels like the format's basically stale at this point, like, or a normal format, you know, 2 to 3 weeks in. When I sit down to a draft, if I were drafting quote-unquote optimally, I would know every pick without much thought in a lot of formats at this point in the format.
Yes.
And I still have to think every single draft pick about what I want to pick, why, and where I'm hoping to go from there. I do really enjoy at this point having to steer through the drafts. And I think especially if you're trying to read signals, because there are signally things, and trying to guess about those and follow your intuition in those senses. I've really enjoyed that lately in the format. So yeah, it's been a great week, and I do feel like I understand it a lot better, not necessarily in a way that's easy to explain to somebody. I think if you've only done 10 drafts, this format is extraordinarily difficult, or whatever. Like, just sitting down, because it's so, the narrative has just been Boros, Teemer, five color. And that is, I think, true. That is a good narrative for the format. But it's really hard to help a listener dig below that without reps.
Well, because there's so, we'll see as we get to some draft logs or discussing some card evaluations that have shifted for us, whatever, however we're going to navigate this episode. But you'll see that, like, there are so many considerations, the checks and balances you're weighing between, I'm going to take this card because I think it sits in the middle of these two archetypes, or I'm going to take this card because I prefer this archetype, or I think this plays best with my first pick, or now I'm drafting two decks, or I'm imagining these two will go in the same deck. There are so many considerations pick to pick. I do agree with you. I don't know, like, it's funny because sometimes I do just kind of want to draft and have it like as my background noise, you know, like I want to draft while I'm watching something, but I feel like I can't with this format right now is kind of the thing, like what you're talking about. Like, I do feel like I have to think a lot about the drafts. I can't go into autopilot mode even in week three, which I guess is a boon for the format. But sometimes you're a tired dad at 6 a.m. watching your kid and you just want to draft
on autopilot, huh?
Exactly. Yeah. So we'll get into all that good stuff in just a second. I want to chat briefly about the Patreon page. Patreon.com/Lords of Limited is where folks can go to give back to the show if they so choose. We have a lot of great perks over at the Patreon page, and the base level, what everybody who gives back to the show gets access to, is the Lords of Limited Discord. And I think I have been engaged in the Discord chats for this format more than I have been for any other format. And I think part of that is the like camp Mardu, camp teamer of it all, that like I really was like, I feel like I need to try and understand what the other side is seeing about things. And so I've been chiming in, I've been a fly on the wall about some discussions, I've been posting my experiences more. And it's just been awesome to get feedback from people, to learn from their experiences a bit more, and engage with that. So just huge shout out to the Discord, loving the discussions over there.
You're doing it wrong. You're just supposed to cancel the other side. Only engage with Camp Teamer.
Yeah, as much as I would like to, it's purely like a, I feel like I need it as a tool in my arsenal to be a better player, you know, to like understand it. Like,
sure,
how
no,
can I
great.
Do it, you know?
I was being sarcastic. Just sounded you were talking about politics for a second for me.
Yeah, that's fair. And the other thing that you can get access to via the Patreon is our podcast feed, which gives you not only access to this episode a day early ad free, but access to our bonus weekly mini episode, though last week not so many, of Lords Unlimited, where anything's on the table. It's mostly Magic, but we'll talk about whatever. We might talk about Survivor, White Lotus, as we did last week. We'll see what we have in store this week for our listeners. But if you want to check that out, if you want to do a week free trial to see how that podcast feed fits into your podcasting life, that is available for you. And we want to shout out our new patrons the first week that they join. This week, we're welcoming Zach, Bram, Bill, Simon, Muhammad, and Philippe. Thank you. We really appreciate your support.
Yeah, cannot say thank you enough. And we do mean that every week. I don't know. I've been feeling very reflective this week. There's been like a lot of stuff, end of year, end of school year stuff going on. Like, this happens to you around New Year's time. Like,
this is
the time of year that it hits me. And like, I just was really reflecting on the senior class this year in band and saying thank you to them. And like, we can't do band without the kids wanting to engage with it. We can't do this podcast without listeners wanting to engage with it. So whether you've been a patron, whether you've been a listener, whether you've checked us out on YouTube, whatever you're doing right now, thank you for engaging with our podcast, truly.
Yeah. So to expand on your thought of like, there's really three decks in the format of like, there's Boros, there's Teemer, there's Five Color Dragons. And then this week, as decks start to pop up in the Discord, someone shared a blue-black tempo trophy that they got in the Discord. Someone shared a blue-green tempo aggro snowmelt stag trophy that they had, and I was like, the more I see decks like this, the more I think this might actually be, I might be now in the camp of there's 20 decks in the format, not three.
That's what I think, but you have to draft the format so much to get there, I think, because it's right to draft them, most of those decks, it's right to draft them 1 to 2 times the whole format, you know?
Right. Yeah, right. Like, you just want to be aware of them. It's not like okay, so these are buckets you can go into. You really have to sort of be like, I guess I'm in this weird narrow niche scenario where blue card, black card, not seeing a lot of good gold cards, the good filler or the good commons I'm seeing are in those two colors, etc. Oops, I ended up in Dimir.
But I think that comes from having good card evals and knowing what's not available to you. Oftentimes, like, that's how I found I end up in the more interesting decks, is reading that. Okay, like, Five Color Dragons definitely isn't open. I'm not seeing dragons, I'm not seeing orbs, that sort of stuff, or I'm not seeing a frontline rush, or like, so you get pushed out of the major archetypes, and then you have to find your own archetype.
That's a really good point. Like, if you're aware of, it's like, whatever, you're seeing the negative space. If you're aware of what's not in the packs versus what is in the packs, that can be just as informative. But to piggyback off of what you said before, you can't do that if you only draft the format 10 times.
Yes, there's just no way. Like, it's yeah. really hard to teach outside of the surface level Boros Teemer / Sultai into five color.
So some of the cooler, or I guess I shouldn't say cooler, but some of the off meta, off script decks that I've done, I have done, we talked about this a few weeks ago, mono red once. That was a weird niche thing. I did do, it wasn't quite pure Rakdos, but it was base red black splashing a couple of Mardu cards. And that was more like a red black sacrificey deck. I did finally get to do dragon, like the Dragon Storm Globe deck this week, because you were talking about it last week. Obviously we chatted about BK's top eight draft in Lords Unlimited, and that was from Spotlight Series Denver, and he was doing that, like the Globes and Dragon Storms, and I just hadn't quite done that. And I got what I thought was, I have had medium to good versions of the deck, and even the medium versions of the deck have overperformed my expectations. Like, I know you said this when we were talking about the deck. You were like, you don't need to take it. It takes the onus off of some of your picks because you don't really need to take fixing because of the Globes and encroaching Dragonstorm potentially. And you don't need to take card advantage because the Dragonstorms are your card advantage. And I know you said that, but I didn't quite understand that until it was happening in the game, you know? Because I had all the mana from the encroaching Dragonstorms, and then I was able to, Breaching Dragonstorm was really able to be every dragon cantrips, and you can still double spell because you have 11 lands in play. Like, I just hadn't experienced that before, and that deck is really, really good.
But it's also difficult to draft if you've not done it before. Like, it's easy to tell someone, Dragonstorm Globe, Dragonstorms, Dragons, and Removal. But, like, there's still some tension about when to pick those. The deck has to be open for you to get a good version of it. It's not easy to draft still. And I think at the time, like this past week, was also pretty contested. So at least in best of all, like, I was trying to do it the couple days after LR put out their episode, because that was when I really understood it. I felt for myself also, and partially thanks to their episode. But it was difficult to do, I think. And that was when I started approaching the format from, okay, what can't I do? Like, as far as reading signals in the draft.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I want to check in on some exhales as well at the end of this discussion. But like, so I just wrote down, like, I don't know, half a dozen decks that I was like, these seem like they could be things. Like, there's red, white aggro, there's black, green counters, there's blue, green tempo, there's blue, red flurry tempo. I don't quite know if black, white is more of a conceptual deck for me at this point.
No, like, black, white's good. Black, white's in. Black, white's underrated right now, and you can get some good black cards late.
That's what I'm trying. Like, I keep wanting to figure out black. And for me this week, Boros, so of course, after talking last week about how, like, I don't feel like I never have to draft Boros because whatever, like, white and Boros have been wide open for me basically every draft this week, which has been frustrating because it's not what I want to do, but also has been, you know, educational, illuminative for me to figure out some things. But I have ideas in my head about making black work. I just never get the opportunity, or haven't yet had the opportunity to do it. What do you see about black white? I know you're a huge aggressive, is that what's called, aggressive negotiations?
Yeah, aggressive negotiations is the truth if you have to play black.
That's the two in a black, Thoughtseize plus put a counter on one of your creatures.
Yeah, it lets you hang in the mid and late game with the dragons decks. And that's the deck's main problem, is just auto losing to some great card once the game hits, you know, turn 7, 8, 9. But aggressive negotiations keeps that from happening to you, and it levels the playing field a little bit from deck to deck. And if you can go 2-drop into negotiations, the way is clear, presumably, unless they have multiple bombs in hand. And you've got a really good threat that you're pressuring them with, and black and white have a lot of good removal. There's good rares that slip through late from black, especially, because I think a lot of the narrative, rightly so, has been that black was the worst color, you know, early on. But I think there's a lot of equity to be gained there right now.
Yeah. There's red, green, like Champion of Dusan, Wild Ride, red, black, sacrifice, blue, black tempo. There's mono colored. I saw Kenji messing with mono blue on stream this week. There's like full clan decks, like true, you're playing a bunch of, you know, white, black, green cards in Abzan, or red, white, black cards in Mardu, or white, red, blue in Jeskai. There's the Dragonstorm. There's Teemer Ramp, which is different than five color dragons.
Yeah, and I think with the full clan decks, the best reason to do those is rares. Like, you should be getting a lot of Abzan rares. You should be getting a lot of Jeskai. You shouldn't be going full clan for commons and uncommons usually.
For two brids, yeah. No, I agree with that. Yeah, you want your Felithars and what have you. There's five color good stuff. This is also the weird nuance of, like, I was in camp five color good stuff last week and was like, that's kind of the same as the Dragons deck to me. And you were like, no, it's not. And then after finally playing with the Dragonstorm deck, I was like, oh, I totally get the line in the sand here between five color good stuff and Globe, Ramp, Dragon, Dragonstorm, Exhale decks. There's Jeskai Control, which is different than full clan Jeskai. And then there are some decks that, like, emerge if you get multiple copies of a card. I am not quite a Tempest Hawk truther myself, but I know there are some out there that are Hawk truthers.
I hear a question in your voice. Are you asking if I'm a Tempest Hawk truther?
I would imagine you are not.
Well, yeah, I am not. Not a chance.
I didn't think so, but I was leaving the space out there for whoever happens to be one. Ice Climber, I feel like, is a card that isn't that good, but, like, you get a couple Ice Climbers and all of a sudden you're like, okay, well, now maybe I want an Agent of Kodis in my deck and I want some more Self Mill so that I can get my Renew cards in there so I can get counters on my Ice Climbers. Dragon's Brood's Relic is another card where you're like, once you have a couple of those, cool, just chalk my deck full of a bunch of two drops, I knock Wayfarers, get in, and then get me to seven mana and poop out some Dragon's Brood Relic tokens, which is different. Like, Relic is pretty hard to be good, as we talked about last week, pretty hard to be good in the Dragonstorm deck. And that, as a distinction, is also, like, pretty tough to wrap your head around if you have only drafted the format 10 times.
Yeah, I'm pretty out on Dragon's Brood Relic. I think it asks you to do a lot of things for a card that's not that good that are counterintuitive to what, like, lots of the decks in the format are asking you to do.
Yeah, I think overall I'm into that as a take, but I think a couple relics is a deck in my mind.
Okay. Ice Climber is one that I have faced down this week. The thing that goes really well with Ice Climber is the blue-green uncommon dragon to dump three counters on it. Like, once it's a 4/6, then you're just playing Protect the Queen with Ice Climber. It was like tempo aggro Ice Climber, try to just kill you. It was a very cool deck.
Oh, yeah. That's interesting. I hadn't thought about that. And then you just have Snakeskin Veil to protect it.
And then you have Snakeskin Veil, yeah. Like, I was like, oh, okay.
I want to get a little temperature check about Exhales, or not temperature check, but I want to talk about the blue and the green Exhale specifically, because I think there's another thing that is not quite intuitive about those cards. So I was drafting on stream yesterday, was drafting a green based dragon deck, and I took Ossius Exhale over Piercing Exhale, and which seemed clear to me. And someone in chat was asking, like, why are we taking, like, it's your first white card. We know we're green. Why are we taking the white Exhale? And I'm like, well, like, I don't anticipate having creatures early, and I want my removal to clear the way early. And I do anticipate having some amount of fixing down the road. And even if I'm not casting Ossius Exhale until turn four off of a Dragon Globe, I still think it's gonna gain me two life. It's gonna get the thing dead, and I don't need to have any setup cost with creatures. And I have had a similar chat about counter spells in a dragon deck where people are like, oh, why aren't we taking, was it Spectral Denial? Is that the X and a blue, the Syncopate variant?
Interference, maybe?
Interference. Okay, thank you. They were asking why I wasn't including that in the deck at the end of the draft. And I said, this deck is never holding up mana. And I just know that I'm going to be put it, if I have that card in my deck, and this is sort of what I was talking about weeks ago, that we got some pushback about. People were like, no, you can play Dispelling Exhales in green decks. And I'm not saying you can't. And I trust folks out there that Dispelling Exhale is doing wonders in the game and hand win rate department. So I'm sure, like, it's just a card that is performing well. It's a good card. But I know that I will put myself in awkward spots of, like, am I supposed to hold up mana now? In decks that are trying to tap out turn after turn. And so that's another layer of this format that I think is not clear of like, okay, there are few cards in this format that are intrinsically powerful. So many yes. of them are, there is a floor to their intrinsic power, but so many of these cards have widely oscillating ceilings of like, okay, if you put it in this deck, it's going to be great. If you put it in this deck, it'll be fine. And I'm trying to sort of min-max all of that. And that's why I'm like, oh, I don't want to play Piercing Exhale. I'm going to take Osseous Exhale. Or, yeah, I know Spectral Interference or Dispelling Exhale. Those are good cards, but I don't think they're going to quite fit in with how this deck's game plan is going to work out.
Yeah, I would say on that note, I think Dispelling Exhale has moved down slightly for me over the course of this week. That's one of the cards I wanted to touch base with you on also. Not that I'm not picking it or not playing it. Like, I think it's a very good card. It's just not pulling me into blue anymore, and I don't think I'm auto playing it in every blue deck. And I think I probably would have auto played it in every blue deck, and I think most blue decks do really want it. But for example, like, I think I had it on par with Molten Exhale, and I'm like way higher on Molten Exhale than it right now. Yes. Because there's just no chance of anything going wrong with Molten Exhale. Like, it's gonna get its mm-hmm. man eventually. The blue exhales has a much wider range. Like, it can be better than Molten Exhale, but it can also be way worse, especially if you're not, like, it's not in a deck where you're able to easily hold up mana. And I think I played with Dispelling Exhale a lot early in the format when I was just savagely getting crushed. And I know that when I have multiple copies of that card or cards that are like that, it incentivizes me to not want to play to the board. And I think that's probably the wrong way to go about it. Like, when I have played Dispelling Exhale lately, and I've been much happier with how I've been playing it lately, I just put it in a normal deck and have it as a card in my deck. I don't try to, I'm not trying to like draw, go, instant speed, whatever. And I certainly think that's the right way to approach it. But as a result, like, I do value it less because removal does a very similar thing. And yes, Dispelling Exhale can nab cards like Jeskai Revelation, etc., that removal can't. But also, if you're playing to the board earlier, you are able to be more proactive and sometimes close the game out before those cards are relevant. So I agree that one has moved down for me. The green one I've been way low on. I think the only deck that the green exhale goes
in my deck. I feel like I've never put them in my decks.
I mean, I have, but it only goes in green beatdown decks or green mid-range right. decks or abs. Like, you have to be playing to the board early with threats like that you mm-hmm. want before you want the green exhale. It's not related to dragons at all, in my opinion.
What about the uncommon, the two in a green, put a counter on something and then it bites?
It's the same thing. They go in the same deck. Same thing. It's just green beatdown decks.
Which is not a tier one deck in my mind. It's an off-ramp. Like, green beatdown decks are off-ramps to me.
I agree. Yeah.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Magic players love stats, so let's talk numbers. Traditional in-person therapy can cost anywhere from $100 to $250 per session, which adds up fast. But with BetterHelp online therapy, you can save on average up to 50% per session.
With BetterHelp, you pay a flat fee for weekly sessions, saving you big on costs, like tapping an elephant token to reduce the cost of a big harmonized spell. Such value!
Therapy should feel accessible, not like a luxury. With online therapy, you get quality care at a price that makes sense and can help you with anything from anxiety to everyday stress.
It's also nice to have a confidant to talk to, bounce ideas off of, and problem solve with. Your mental health is worth it, and now it's within reach.
With over 30,000 therapists, BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform, having served over 5 million people globally.
It's convenient, too. You can join a session with a click of a button, helping you fit therapy into your busy life.
Your well-being is worth it. Visit BetterHelp.com/lords to get 10% off your first month.
That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/lords. And now, back to the show.
Should we chat about devotees?
We should chat about devotees. So last week we did like a brief 10-minute segment on mana bases, and it didn't talk about devotees. And we got some great comments on YouTube about it. And I think rightly so. Like, I think we should have. I had not played with the devotees that much at the time that we recorded last week. And I've played with the devotees a ton over the course of the past week. And I think they are really good. And the thing that was not intuitive to me that I think has also started to help me make better decks or build better decks is I think that devotees are better than lands in most cases, which is kind of wild to me to say out loud. Because if you'd asked me going into the format, I would say, like, Yeah, I'm taking a tri-land or a non-color dual over a devotee every time, and I don't think that's the case for me in most situations anymore. For the good devotees, there's like,
which is
always
two.
Play devotees. Yeah, but they're really good.
They are really good. I agree, but like this blanket statement of I'm taking devotees over lands, like it'll be a cold day in somewhere where I'm taking Teemer devotee over Frontier Bivouac. Like, get out
sure,
of here.
Yeah, but Teemer devotee is just a bad card. So
yeah,
I think. Yeah, so, but I just, when I'm talking about the devotees, like, just Teemer devotee doesn't exist. Like, that card is, you're hoping to never play that card. It is the bottom of the bottom of the bottom of the devotee power rankings.
Right, that is the card that people consistently seem to be trying to defend, where they're like, it's good for defensive speed against the aggro decks, and like, sure, but it is a blank piece of cardboard against any other deck in the format. And like, maybe it helps you if you've got a ton of harmonize cards. Maybe it helps you cast
those. Because then you're tapping
those out
against the aggro decks and they're just smacking. No.
Yeah.
Teemer Devotee is a hard no.
I think Teemer Devotee is a hard no for me as well.
But the rest of them, they fix your mana, which you really want to do. They force you to play to the board early, which you want to do. I think both of those things are good for the format. Like, if I'm talking about them over lands, I certainly think it's the Mardu and the Jeskai one. Those are pretty clear picks over lands in their respective decks, because those are also the decks that want to be the most proactive. Like, you don't want to spend tons of picks on lands in those decks. The Sultai and the Abzan one, those are more middling. Like, they're middling plus, but I appreciate those, I think, more than I did weeks prior. And I do think your mana's like on. As soon as you have a devotee, your mana's on if it doesn't die. Like, that's really powerful.
When most of them, you don't, like the Mardu one, you don't want to spend removal on because it's a 1/2 and they already got the scry from it. The Jeskai one is the one, Jeskai and Sultai, you feel okay spending removal on them. And the Abzan one, you also don't want to spend a removal spell on it. Though I think more often than not, you should if you are inclined to do so. But you often don't want to spend removal on it because you're like, they can just get it back. But that's actually a pretty big setup cost for the player with the Abzan devotee.
I agree. Anytime somebody's looping an Abzan devotee, I feel like the game is over. Like, I aggressively trade with Abzan devotee, and I'm sad when mine dies. Like, you just don't have time to spend 3 mana to get it back and cast it again.
Okay, so do you want to talk about these individually? Do you have more to say about them overarchingly?
Well, just that I think we were a mea culpa in terms of not talking about them last week when we talked about mana. But yeah, we should dial in on them individually. So Mardu, I've finally played now. There was a 2.5-week period where I just hadn't cast it in the format yet because I think other people had it higher in their pick. Like, I knew it was good, but other people had it higher in their pick order than I had in mine, even though I knew it was good. And so I just never ended up with it. And I have finally played with it, and it felt very good casting it. I assume you probably want this in straight red-white. I have not done it there yet. When I've played it, I've been like red-white, still touching black. But I think I would happily play it in red-white.
So I had, I was drafting Boros on stream yesterday, and I had someone, I had a back and forth with a handful of people in the Discord because I had what seemed like a busted aggro deck that I 1/2'd with in best of three. And I was sort of just, you know, complaining about it in Discord, and then got some really helpful feedback about like, these are some cards that I don't think are great. These are some cards that you're missing. And then one of those folks was in my stream yesterday, Wandering Winder, as I was drafting another Boros deck. And they said, I had this pick come up between Shock Brigade and Mardu Devotee. And before yesterday, I was like, I picked Shock Brigade over Mardu Devotee.
That's where, like, I was too. That's why I kept never ending up with Mardu Devotee, because I faced that exact pick.
And then at the, like, towards the, I think it was at basically in pack three, I was like, okay, all I need are one drops. And then in the game, I also was like, it'd just be nice to be able to whatever, smooth my mana out or have this thing or the scry. And Wandering Winder was like, that's why it's like not intuitive, but that's why I like Devotee over Shock Brigade. Like, Shock Brigade feels more powerful, but there are the two drops are just so much more replaceable than the one drops. There just aren't one drops. And Mardu Devotee does something for the Boros decks, like being able to go Devotee into something that makes two bodies into a pack beast on three. Like, Devotee lets you do that. Chalk Brigade doesn't quite let you do that as uniquely. So, yes. And I messaged you this, like, sort of tongue-in-cheek. I was like, Martyr Devotee is Thraben Inspector. I mean, it's not. But it's, like, closer to Thraben Inspector than it's closer to not being Thraben Inspector.
This is a hot take. It's a hot take.
I mean, how, like, is a Free Scry 2 that? It's close. A Free Scry 2 close. Is close to two mana draw card.
Yeah, it's pretty close. It's close.
Yeah. Martyr Devotee is a hell of a card. And the thing that you're talking about the they fix your mana instantly, they also, like, really fix your mana if you are in those true clan decks. Like, if you're a Jeskai deck or you're a Mardu deck or an Abzan deck and you have a bunch of those ABC, like, 1, 2, 3 of different colored costed three drops, the Devotees make those just trivially easy to cast on curve.
Yeah, completely agree. Felt a little Michael Jackson in my head there. ABC, 1, 2, 3.
Yeah.
But yeah, the Devotees are excellent. I think Jeskai is the number two slot. Although I've played with the Jeskai one way more than the Mardu one, because I think the similar thing's happening where I have the Jeskai one higher in my pick order than most people do, so I keep ending up with it. I also really like starting red in the format right now. And I think it makes it... The thing about starting red is red makes it easy to toe the line between red-white and then, like, other decks that are not red, white, and you can bop around back and forth a little bit. And Jeskai really holds the room together while keeping both of those options open for you, because you end up with much better mana, I think, overall. It gets you on board. It swings as a 3-3 when you double spell, which most of your red decks want to do. If you end up with two or three of them, and then you're looking at splashing Jeskai cards off just a couple lands, you have four or five sources then without needing to do anything to your other main colors. And if you are actual Jeskai with, you know, two or three Jeskai Devotees, all of a sudden you're counting your sources and you're like, oh, I'm like 9, 10, 11 of my three. It's just crazy what they do for your source count when they're in the dedicated clan deck.
And Jeskai Devotee hits. Like, if you're building, certainly if you're in a Boros deck, but even blue-red tempo decks or red-green beats decks, like, you can end up in spots where that is a 3-3, three turns in the game. Like, if you're building your curve super low, you can't double spell with it. Or, I had this come up in a really cool blue-red deck, I just had a bunch of Harmonize cards, and that was helping me double spell as well. And so this was just... And the more often that it's a 2-mana 3-3, it just, like, laughs in the face of the teamer one, because you're like, I can attack with this as a 3-3. So, yeah, I'm a huge Jeskai Devotee fan as well.
Pour one out for Teamer Devotee. Sultai and Abzan, this is where I'm less interested in them, but the Sultai one does generally trade for something relevant, although the format's not about blocking on the ground so much as the green one with Death Touch. It is very good in tandem with the green white spells, because it has Death Touch. I think that's a place where you start to get more interested in Piercing Exhale as well, if you've got, you know, a couple, 2-3 Sultai Devotees running around. But I do think it being stuck on the ground is a bit of a liability. And then the Abzan one, it's also fine. Like, I have liked it. I have finally played Abzan this week. I was quite happy with the Abzan Devotee in my Abzan auto lose decks. That's what I've been calling it on stream. But this week has been auto lose for my opponents. I've had some banger Abzan decks. Yeah, so I do like the Abzan Devotee, I think, in certain spots, and then I'm avoiding the Teamer Devotee at all costs. I would have to be desperate before including a Teamer Devotee in my decks.
The things about, like, the Mardu and the Jeskai ones feel like pieces for their clans. And I guess maybe it sounds like for you the Abzan one does too. Like, I just haven't played Sultai, like, as a color combination basically at all. Like, if I'm Sultai, I'm probably also playing red and white cards. Like, I don't think I've ever been true Sultai in the way that I have been. That's why in my mind, like, the clan decks are, I guess, really everything but Sultai. Like, I have been true teamer, true, like, with lots of cards with blue, red, and green in them, and I have been Abzan with lots of cards with white, black, and green in them. But Sultai, I just haven't really been that, partially because I don't love a lot of the non-rare Sultai cards, like the two brids are kind of whatever to me, and But the 2-mana 2/1 death touch with a little bit of fixing on the side is good in your dragon. Like, you can play it in your dragon globe decks. You can play it certainly in just 5-color good stuff decks. Like, it's just good as a, if you're base green trying to get the game to go long, having that as a little roadblock on turn two is good. Talk to me about the Abzan one. Like, how does it play out in the Abzan auto lose decks? Like, are you finding it's just a good, like, just good because you need the fixing, or you're playing some worthy costs and it's nice to have something to sacrifice, or what's going on with it?
It's a 2-drop, and I think you want 2-drops. There aren't tons of 2-drops that you're like jazzed about playing in the format, but you do need to get on board before the 5-color decks to start pressuring them. I really like it if you're running aggressive negotiations as a 2-drop, you're happy to play and then dump the counter. Once it's a 3-2, then your opponent kind of has to trade with it, then you can get it back. It's just done a lot of small things, I think, with fixing your mana for, you know, an Abzan deck as well. And there are cards like that you want you to sacrifice things. You don't hate sacrificing it after your mana is already set up later in the game. I think there's just a lot of small things that it does well.
Okay, that makes sense to me. I haven't quite, I'll be curious to get, I think we may have a draft log later to pick your brain about getting into Abzan, because it doesn't come up that often for me.
Yeah, I think you really have to get pushed into it. You certainly should not be looking to be Abzan, in my opinion.
I still love the monuments, I gotta say. I think they might be my favorite cards in the format. I mean, I hear what we're saying about the devotees here, and I think I'm probably on board with, like, Mardu. Like, obviously, Mardu devotee is, I guess it depends what you're trying to do. It just depends what you're trying to do. Like, if you're trying to go Boros, Mardu devotee is the pants. But, like, Mardu monument's so good.
But is it, though?
Yeah, it is.
Here's where I'm at on the monuments. I think Mardu devotee, I would take over all the monuments, probably. Uh-huh. Pack one, pick one. And I think you're
definitely supposed to do that. Yes.
Yeah. And then I think Jeskai devotee is probably better than the Jeskai monument for any sort of red white Jeskai deck. I think the green monuments are better than the green devotees. Certainly, like, the super you are, the more you want the green X monuments. But the other thing I feel about the monuments, and I do like the monuments. The monuments and the devotees being a spell that fixes your mana that lets you double spell. There's a lot of good double spell payoffs in the format, and that's a real thing. Also, like, drawing those late and then, whatever, doing more than just being a land, like triggering a double spell, or, you know, then cracking a monument. But so rarely does cracking a monument affect the game.
I went deep in the tank to try and think about how I want to respond to this question. I'm still not quite sure, because I hear what you're saying about it not affecting the outcome of the game. But here's how the monuments fit into my gameplay diet, is that, like, turn 6, I get to kill something and crack the Jeskai monument. And, like, yeah, are those 2/1s gonna win me the game? No. But, like, I got a land. It's like a land gave me 2/1s, sort of. You know, like they're 2-for-1s in that respect. And they in and of themselves are not going to win the game for you. But the cumulative effect of 2-for-1s value, double spell, and it's not a double spell, but it's a spell and an activation. Like, I just think they're really, really good cards. And the thing that I still feel so strongly is I never want to miss land drops. Ever in this format. And I love that the monuments let me never feel like I have to miss land drops, and they fix when I'm doing nonsense, and they do double spelling. Like, all of that is really, really good.
I agree. They're good. I mean, I don't want to come across as anti-monument here. I think,
I don't know, but I don't know where you're at, because, like, a week ago you said you like Inok Wayfarer over monuments, you know? Like, So I don't know where you're at with the monuments these days.
Is that which one is Inok Wayfarer? Is that that's 2/1 the that pumps your team?
That's the green one.
That is an insane statement. I do not feel that way at all.
Okay.
I can't believe I said that. I was talking, who was I talking to? I don't remember. I was talking to someone, and I think we owe a lot of podcast listeners, like, we need to set up a gem redemption fund if they listen to our takes at the start of the format. I feel like we owe listeners a draft or something where they can be like, yeah, I drafted some snowmelt stags and some whatever. I need a free draft from Lords of Limited.
That's fair. Yeah. We'll talk to the Arena dev team and see if we can set that up. A listener redemption.
But yeah, so like, to be clear, I do love Monuments way more than I like Einok Wayfarer. But the thing that I consistently feel from them is, if they are cracked, if my opponent's cracking them, I'm probably generally pretty happy that they don't have better things to do with their mana. And to your point, like, it's still better to have that thing to do with your mana than have nothing to do. And mm-hmm. I think I do like the Jeskai one the best of all of them. Like, the 5/5 elephant from Teemer, like, you're just never winning the game with that. And if that's your best play on 6 mana, you're in a bad spot as that deck, I think.
Right, but like, those decks are going, they get to turn 13. And so you're gonna have time.
I don't think so. Some games play out that way, but a lot of times, like, there's the cards are so powerful in mm-hmm. the format. Like, what's a 5/5 elephant doing in the face of Morang River Regent? What's it doing in the face of Jeskai Rev? What's it doing in the face? Like, there's a list of 30 rares, like, that just completely invalidate anything that's happened before them. And I think But the monuments also help you cast those cards. Like, I value the monuments for fixing. Like, I'm down for spend 2 mana. That's where they're good. Like, that's mm-hmm. how I'm evaluating them. If I get to crack it, gravy. But I'm in for, like, 2 mana play a card that lets me search up a land that I might get to crack over the course of a game.
Yeah. Okay. I'm not dying
for
five.
We're probably closer than this conversation says.
Yeah, yeah. We got some individual cards to check in on. We got a draft log to do, and maybe just like what's your draft philosophy these days?
I mean, similar to what we've talked about last week, but I feel so clear about the draft right now. Like, I feel like I'm seeing the matrix, which I really like when I hit that point in a format, especially because I feel like it's still difficult to see the matrix. Like I said, like, I can't go on autopilot. Like, I'm having to think about every pick and make some good decisions, but It's very, to give quick hits, you just pick the good cards. Like, I think that truly is the secret sauce to the format. And then moving lands way down, especially as devotees and other things have moved up, like, lands have plummeted in my pick order over the course of this last week. And they were already moving down, but like, have gone down, 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 down.
It would be interesting to check in on that, like, draft log we did last week, where we spent the whole episode being like, don't pick lands. And then we did take 2 lands to start. I wonder, even if I looked at that draft log now, if I'd be like, nah, you got to take something else. Like, I do feel like if I take, to your point of, you draw kind of a line in the sand about pick 6 is where you take stock. I really want to not be taking lands before then, if I can help it.
Yeah, I don't know. I would have to look at the log again. Clearly, I was taking Einok Wayfarer over Monuments last week. That's laughable. But anyway, so I think just take the good cards. Like, but you can't mess that step up. Like, if you're taking the second or the third best card in the pack, like, Sirkovits did a thing on his thing about what happens if you just literally take the best card out of the pack in one of his data talks, which was really interesting, and it ups your win rate. Like, if you can do that in this format, like, it's going to be great for you. And then try to play as many of them as possible in a cohesive shell. And if that's not like Mardu or Teemer or Boros or 5-color, figuring out the right shell to put your cards in the best home is the next best place. Like, you can up your win rate. And I do think one of the things I don't have down here, but that I'm definitely doing, is reading signals by what I can't do. And then using that to try to figure out what I can do, like letting what I don't see available as a path shove me towards paths that are available. Whereas usually I'm trying to read, but usually when you're reading signals, you're trying to read what is getting past me? Like, what am I seeing? In this format, it's more, what am I not seeing? I do think I'm doing that without really having verbalized that before recording this episode.
This is my favorite takeaway from this episode so far, and I imagine will be. Like, this, because I feel this too, I have felt this. Is there a way we can put something concrete to it? Like, do you have an example in the, off the cuff that you can give? Because what I'm picturing, oh, you do, great, let's go.
I mean, dragons is the easiest one. That's why I was saying, like, that there aren't many paint by numbers decks in the format. Mm-hmm. But last week I was saying, well, the Dragonstorm Globe deck, that is a paint by numbers deck. And that's definitely something I'm tracking. Through the first 6 picks, how many good dragons am I seeing? And if the answer to that is not many, I'm definitely not trying to go dragonstorms. Like, that's an easy one to either you start with a couple powerful dragons and you're seeing dragons and you're in, or if you're not seeing good dragons through the first 6 picks, I'm out.
But what happens if you've taken a couple exhales and you see a dragon storm that you like? Pick five, but you haven't seen, but you haven't picked up dragons yet. Are you still okay to push down that path? Or are you a little worried? Do you feel like you got to?
I'm not pushing down the path at that point. Like, but I'll have those cards, and if it happens, great. But I'm no longer forging down that path without good dragons initially, because okay. I've gotten burned too many times by having the dragon storms and having the stuff, and like other people are clearly just taking dragons. Like, I think dragons is a very clear one to track, yes or no. And then similarly, I think for Boros, there's a lot of checks. Like, have I seen a war effort? Have I seen a sharpshooter? Have I seen a frontline? Like, have I seen those cards? If I'm not seeing those cards, or like a Mardu devotee or something. And if no, maybe I'm gonna, by the same token, you don't have to approach drafting this way, but it has been helpful for me. It's what I've enjoyed the most. You also can at surface level sit down, like I truly believe you could sit down and say, I'm going to draft Boros every draft and probably get a reasonable-ish Boros deck most times and probably would have a good win rate because the times it's open, it's very good. Mm-hmm. I just haven't enjoyed drafting that way.
Yeah, the reason I like this sentiment so much is it just evokes a feeling that I have had in drafts where like I'm not seeing the thing that I'm drafting. It gets to pick five, pick six, and I'm like, there's nothing for me in this pack. And there wasn't anything for me last pack. But I'm also not seeing something that excites me. And usually those situations are easy when you're like, oh, wow, what is this doing here? Pick six. But much more often than not, it's what there's nothing here for me. Pick six. And so then it's about, okay, how do I, you have two choices. How do I make, is the stuff that I have already powerful enough to push forward? And understanding that it'll be a rocky road ahead in the draft, but that what I have so far is powerful enough. Or it's about what are my off ramps with what I have so far? Because you're not going to be getting a, like, it's easy when you see something really good. And even something like a Sibsig Appraiser, like, you know, sometimes you get those pick six, pick seven. Even something like that is an easy thing to be like, oh, okay, cool. Come aboard, like, and then I'll figure out how that works with what I've already drafted, or if it doesn't and I'm moving down something else. But I think it's just about understanding the how do the cards I have either give me enough weight to push forward with the strategy I want to go down, or how do they let me off ramp to something that's not tier one?
Yeah, I think that's a really good succinct way to frame it. And then if you are, you know, doing these things, you're picking the good cards, you're trying to put them in cohesive shells, you're reading what's not there and forging down either a path that is there, or you're holding on for dear life and your deck's great anyway because you have great cards. Just know that the format's really powerful. Sometimes good decks lose. Like, that acceptance piece has been good for me also, because I think the thing that has really solidified for me this week is I feel confident about my power level evaluations of individual cards, combinations of cards together, and decks. Whereas before, when I was losing, like, it's just so hard to get a sense of all of that. And sometimes you're gonna have a great deck and you're gonna have done the right things in the draft, and your opponent's gonna play Morang River Region, or they're gonna play Jeskai Rev, or they're gonna curve out with Mardu Devotee into Sharpshooter into War Effort, and the game's gonna be over. And that's just a cost of doing business in the format. But I think at this point, I'm in on paying that cost, because I think the drafts are interesting enough and hard enough that I really enjoy that piece this week.
Yeah.
Okay, let's check in on some individual cards. Stormplane Detainment. This is 2 and a white for the enchantment, O-ring effect. Nab something non-land permanent until it leaves the battlefield. This has really gone up for me. I previously was taking the white exhale over this, and that is no longer the case. Stormplane Attainment hitting everything, not needing the creature to be engaged in combat. It can reach out and nab some of the busted enchantments running around. I think it's a very versatile answer and efficient enough at 3 mana.
Well, and it has come up enough for me that the uncommon version of this doesn't nab enchantments, but this can. Like, the fact that you can have an enchantment war with like I detainment your detainment or whatever, but can't do that with the uncommon. Stormblade Detainment has been very impressive.
Yeah, I would say, I don't know if it's best white common, because I'm just looking at Salt Road Pack Beast right now, which is next on the list, which is also very good. 5 and a white for the 4/3 ETBs, draw a card, cost one less to cast for each creature on the battlefield. This is as good as it was advertised initially by you. Like, you have to do the work to go wide, but when you stick Salt Road Pack Beast, it's really good.
Yes. So is Mardu Devotee not the best white common?
Is it? Yeah, maybe it is. Okay, yeah. I just haven't played with it that much. I've literally only, which I'm embarrassed to say as a podcaster, but I've probably only cast it less than 5 times, all format. But it's just because other people have it. Like, I know it's good, and I think it's good, but other people must have it, like, 2 picks ahead of me in their pick order or whatever.
I think for Mardu Devotee to be the best white common, you have to be Camp Boros. Because I'm not taking Devotee that highly, because I don't want to draft Boros that much. But so
yeah, I think that's also true for me. I would take Stormplane Attainment Pack 1, Pick 1 over Mardu Devotee because it's a more versatile card.
Correct.
I think it's Stormplane Attainment for my money. But I could see the arguments there, and that's what's so interesting about the drafts.
Yes.
In this format, is the cards vary wildly depending on their shells. But the other thing about Salt Road Pack Beast, you'd asked what's going on with Black White. Salt Road Pack Beast is huge in Black White. Like getting the Pack Beast to keep the card advantage flowing, because that's one of the reasons that Abzan has been so bad, is that like it doesn't have a lot of velocity. And if you're Black White and you can play the board and you have the Pack Beast, that keeps the cards flowing while keeping the pressure on your opponent.
Yeah.
Focus the Mind, way down on this. The 4 and a blue instant, draw 3, discard 1. We were way too high on this. This is another gem redemption card here. it is insane with Narset's Rebuke, but all of that is two clunky tastes that taste amazing together. But it's ultimately not worth it to pick them highly ever. Like, you'll play it, but it's never a high pick. It can randomly win some games. Powerful card, but not a high pick ever.
Yeah, I still stand by, like, Unending Whisper is way better than this card.
Yes, I agree. And also still not a super high pick, usually, I don't think.
No. Though, I mean,
it's really good if you want a double spell. Once you have the 2 and a blue 2/2 that poops out the birds, then it shoots up your pick order.
Which is on this list. Wingblade Disciple is just an excellent card. So I'm like, must kill.
Amazing. Yeah. It's very, very, very good. Mm-hmm. We talked about Dispelling Exhale. I just want to shout out Aggressive Negotiations one more time. Like,
yeah.
Truly believe this is the key to making black work in the format. Like, you have to be able to strip your opponents of their bombs. And if you can, black's a lot more viable. So many of the games in this format hinge on one card, and Aggressive Negotiations is as good as Toll of the Invasion was in War of the Spark. Aggressive Negotiations is that good in this format.
Okay, so black common power rankings. Is Caustic Exhale number one still for you? There's Feral Deathgorger, the Dragon Omen, Nightblade Brigade, the 1/3 Death Touch Mobilize 1, ETB Surveil 1.
Format All-Star Adorned Crocodile hanging out here. There's
Format All-Star Adorned Crocodile. No gem redemption necessary. That's hot take preview season. I didn't say it was good after playing with it.
Okay, so Black Power Rankings. I think Caustic Exhale 1, Dragon's Prey 2.
Is Dragon's Prey better than Caustic Exhale? Is that possible?
Depends on the deck. I think I want the first Caustic Exhale over the first Dragon's Prey, pack one, pick one, for sure. Because Caustic Exhale is so much better in the Dragon's deck.
And against Boros.
And against Boros, yeah.
Yeah,
But Dragon's Prey is really good. So it's Exhale 1, Prey 2. I think I would have Negotiations 3 ahead of Abzan Devotee. I think that would Abzan Devotee would be 4 for me.
Interesting. Okay.
And like the cards that we were kind of excited about, like Nightblade Brigade, Kintree Nurturer, they just don't matter at all. I've also come way down on Feral Deathgorger. That card is totally whatever. You were right to push back on that.
Worthy Cost is a card I have my eye on that I haven't played that much of. This is the single black sack a thing, exile a thing. I just feel like there is a deck out there that can make use of getting 3 of these. It's just black white.
Yeah. I think it's black white.
Cause that's insane. Like, exile and 1 mana is incredible.
Yeah. It's very good. Meticulous Artisan. It's another card, 3 and a red for 3/3 with prowess. ETBs makes a treasure. Shout out to Sam for championing this card, and I would not have tried it without him, but after playing it, it plays really nicely. It often, almost always in blue-red, attacks as a 4/4, which is great. Frequently attacks as a 4-mana 5/5 and gives you the treasure to help you double spell or help you splash, or in red-green, you can hold up Snakeskin Veil the turn that you cast it. It does a lot of small things really well in the format, and I don't think it's a high pick, but I much happier to include it than I would have ever. I probably would never have tried it. I do like the card.
I'm excited to hear you about Wild Ride. Have you cast some Wild Rides this week?
I have cast some Wild Rides this week, and it's impressive. Like, it's so funny because, like, that's the narrative. People are like, well, what about Wild Ride here? And I'm always like, I don't know. It seems like not a good card. And they're like, oh, but it's so good. And now I feel like I'm on the it's so good camp. But I also know it's not a good card intrinsically, right? Like, no. If you evaluate it as a card, it is an atrocious Magic the Gathering card. But what it does, like, if you check some boxes, it can be really strong. Because the thing it lets you do that's so hard to do in the format is get the game over with in a hurry. Like, and that's really valuable. So this is the red sorcery +3/+0, and it's got harmonize for 4 in a red, and it gives you a thing +3/+0 in haste. It's really good if you check the boxes of aggressive, having evasion, and wanting to double spell. Like, those, that's been the key for me. Like, if you can check all those boxes, check, it's really strong because it costs the 1 mana. You're pushing, it's like a double lava axe in one card almost. Because, like, let's say in tandem with Wingblade Disciple, which is where I like it the best, all of a sudden Wingblade Disciple on 4 mana is chipping in as a 5/2 flyer. You're pooping out another bird, so you just lava axed your opponent, made a bird, and then you get to lava axe them again. Like, it, a lot of times it pushes 8 damage, 9 damage. Like, it's not, if it's in the right home. Now, if you're like playing it to make your 1/1 token trade with your opponent's thing, I think that's where it's going to woefully underperform. But if you check those boxes of evasion, wanting to double spell, and being aggressive, I think it's really good.
Yeah, the thing I felt last week about the card, I still do. And all you're saying about evasion is great and red on the money. But I want to say Wild Ride is not a, it's not something you should be going after. It's not a tier one strategy, but it is so good if you're having to off ramp. Like, it's so responsible for some oops, I wins, which a lot of off ramp decks kind of need, of like, where do I get power when I'm not seeing powerful cards in a draft? And Wild Ride, I think, fits that bill.
Yeah, that sounds like you're higher on it than I am. Like a deck or anything like that. It's just a card that you will include in your deck.
But I don't think it plays very well in Boros.
Correct.
Right. And well, so I did have that, some trouble with that this week, but I've now since learned from that, thanks to some folks in the Discord. But I think that, like, the things you're talking about, like, I don't know, I don't think blue red tempo is necessarily tier one, but if I end up feeling like that's where my draft is going, then all of a sudden Wild Ride is like a diamond in the rough that I know that I'm going to get access to.
That's what I'm trying to say. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Heritage Reclamation is another one. This is the one in a green instant that blows up an artifact, an enchantment, or removes something from a graveyard. I think this is okay to include in your five color late game decks if you're planning on the game going long, because you need to be able to account for enchantments, and this does that for green. But also, it also shuts down like Jeskai Revs being pulled out of the graveyard or like things like that. It's truly like, it's like the Bath Song deck, like trying to cover all your bases. This is fine as a one of in those late game decks. No?
I do not. You're making faces. I don't go sign this. Like, if I am desperate for main deck enchant removal and green, I will play the Leopard over it, because then at least I have a two drop against Boros. Like, Heritage Reclamation is potentially a dead card.
And no, yes, you can, it always cycles for a card.
You can cycle it, but you don't want to do that. Like, my worry about those decks is not the game going long. If the game goes long, I feel good. My worry about those decks is dying early, and Heritage Reclamation does not help me stop dying early.
That's fair. Sarkhan's Resolve, one or green for the +3/+3 or kill a flyer. This is insane in green beatdown decks, but also just a fine card to play in the format for just Plummet. Like, I think Plummet's probably main deckable in the format.
I think that's mostly right. Yeah.
Teemer Tawnyback, this is the best of the Tubrid commons. This is a reason to be full Teemer or green beatdown. Like, if you can reliably cast this on three for green, red, blue, it's an excellent card. And Reigning Victor is the other one. And this is why Teemer and the Mardu are two of the best clans, I think, because these are the two best Tubrids also. I consistently underrate Reigning Victor, which is the Mardu 3/3, comes down, gives something +1/+0 and indestructible, and then has mobilize one. if you are going full Mardu, which I would advise against generally, like I would try to be Boros, but if you dip into the Mardu space and you've got the mana for it, Reigning Victor's kind of really annoying card.
Well, you can also, like, if you're valuing Mardu Devotee appropriately highly, you can just play this in Boros on three mana.
But you don't want to be playing this in Boros. Like, you want to be Mardu then, right? Like, there's a big line between Boros and Mardu. Like, there's Boros splash, like, a Mardu bomb, like that stupid mythic that makes combat happen twice and gives everything mm-hmm. death touch. What's that called? All out assault or something. There's a big line between Boros splash a card like that, and then Mardu. Like, you got to be Mardu before you want to play the Reigning Victor, I think.
But isn't Reigning Victor, like, I guess, are you that aggressive? Is Mardu aggressive? Is it mid-range? Like, I don't know what you mean when you're saying you're Mardu.
It's mid-rangier than Boros, for sure.
And you want to play Reigning Victor in that deck?
I do. It's been like, I have not cast it that much. I have had one Mardu deck where I cast it, and it was similar to what it's done to me, which is like, when you play 2-drop into Reigning Victor, and your opponent's not doing it, hits hard. Like, it pushes an extra damage, maybe can give them an attack through whatever blocker they have for their 2-drop.
But you can do that. The Mardu Devotee lets you do that. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Mardu Devotee lets you do that. But I think this card's atrocious if you're paying 4 mana for it, I guess, is the distinction. And I think you're putting it in a Boros deck, the odds that you're going to have to pay 4 mana are high enough that I'm not interested.
Gotcha. Okay.
Monastery Messenger is the other one. I hate that this card's in the format. We've talked about it. But if you have the insane spells, like if you get the Jeskai Revs, if you get the Inspired Ultimatums, you should be playing Monastery Messengers, which is the Jeskai 2-Brid, and looping those spells until your opponent submits, because they will.
and you are that opponent.
I am that opponent, but do you know what solves that problem? Aggressive Negotiations, Exiles, baby.
That's right. I thought you were going to say Heritage Reclamation.
No, Heritage Reclamation, that's also clearly PTSD.
You clearly do.
It's happened way too much to me in this format. Marshal of the Lost is another one. This is the black-white 3-3 death touch and gives an attacker plus X equal to the number of attackers. It's been a real problem for me out of Mardu decks.
Yeah, I have found myself so often with, like, I'm all cozy with my Osseous Exhale, and then my opponent plays Marshal of the Lost, and I'm like, do I have to spend Osseous Exhale on a 1/1 token so I don't take 5 or whatever? Yeah, it's not great.
Yeah, it's tough. You've got Descendant of Storms here. This is a very polarizing card in the format. It's white for a 2/1, and when it attacks, you can pay 1 on a white to have it either put a +1/+1 counter on it or make a 1/1, whatever that mechanic is called.
Mm-hmm. Endure.
There we go.
Yeah, this is the one card I'm still so flummoxed by. Like, there are people who think it's like the best uncommon in the set in the Lords of Limited Discord. People singing its praises, unbeatable, whatever. I have never experienced that. Certainly playing it myself, and I have never felt the pressure of Descendant of Storms from my opponent.
Yeah, I think Mardu Devotee is better than this card.
By a lot, I think. I just don't think Descendant of Storms matters that much.
The thing that it does, that Mardu Devotee does similar, is it enables the Salt Road Pack Beast, like Nuts curves.
Yes.
But, yeah. And like, similar to your thought about the monuments, like, do you really want to spend 5 mana to whatever, make 2/2s? This gives you a thing to do with extra mana from red white. Like, if you don't have your 2-drop, it's nice to have your 1-drop poop out a 1/1 or whatever.
I guess.
I agree. I'm not. This card is fine to me. I will play it, but it's not.
I guess at me if you haven't already added me, if you have some insights about Descendant of Storms, but I am still perplexed by this card and the love for it. Should we do a little Abzan log real quick before we go?
Sure. Let's do it. All right. Pack one, pick one. See the following cards as options. There's a bunch of devotees in honor of this episode. There's Sultai, Jeskai, and Abzan devotees.
And Mardu.
Holy cow, there's 4 devotees. That's wild. Clearly, this is why I don't end up with Mardu devotees. I didn't even see that it was in the pack. There's Opulent Palace, the Sultai Triland. There's Dragonbrood's Relic. That's the 1 in a green tapper that can poop out a dragon that we talked about earlier. I'm pretty out on that card. There's Unsparing Boltcaster, 2 in red, 3/3, when it ETBs, deals 5 to a creature an opponent controls that was dealt damage this turn. And then moving on to the rare slot, there's Sinkhole Surveyor. One in a black for the 1/3 with flying, and whenever it attacks, you lose a life, and this creature endures one. We've had another draft that I started with Sinkhole Surveyor, and you didn't like it. I went into this one with eyes wide open after our discussion last time.
I'm hungry to figure out black to get to be able to play black, so I would take the Surveyor. I think taking Mardu Devotee is probably correct, air quotes.
That's a tough sell for me.
Really?
Yeah, I think so. Because, like, you're just signing up to draft Boros. That's so boring.
Well, it is boring, but you'll win. But you will
win.
You will win.
I think a card, like, I'm much more interested in, like, I agree that Mardu Devotee is certainly the pick over Jeskai Devotee, but I like Jeskai Devotee because it goes in a wider style of decks. And Mardu Devotee is not powerful enough for aggro that I'm putting weight on. I guess it probably is, but
it is. That's the shift. Yeah.
I'm not willing to put weight on it to steer me towards aggro. Kind of what it was a similar discussion. I forget what card it was about last week. Maybe it was the sharpshooter that we took after taking a good late game card.
I wanted to take Monument. Yeah.
Yeah. That's kind of how I feel about Mardu Devotee. But you could convince me that Mardu Devotee is the correct pick here over Surveyor. Not for me. I think I would always take Surveyor, but I would be willing to acknowledge that I'm doing that incorrectly and still do it anyway.
Okay. So we take Surveyor.
Take Surveyor, pack one, pick one. Pack one, pick two. See the following cards as options. And this is why you take Mardu Devotee, because it's just a clearer path through the draft. But this is why you don't start black also. But cards in the pack. There's a Shock Brigade. One in red for the 1/3 menace. Mobilize one. There's Sibsig Appraiser. Two in a blue for the 2/1. Look at the top two. Put one in your hand and the other in your graveyard. There's Kishla Skimmer. Blue-green for the 2/2. Whenever a card leaves your graveyard during your turn, you draw a card. That ability triggers only once each turn. And there's also Overwhelming Surge, 2 in a red, a deal 3, and blow up a non-creature artifact. Only reasonable black card in the pack is Alchemist Assistant, which I hate. It's 1 in a black for the 2/1 lifelink, and you can renew for 1 in a black to put a lifelink counter on something.
It's another card that's like, it's real good against aggro, and real doesn't matter against the rest of the format. Yep. I am really down on Overwhelming Surge currently. I do not like... I just don't like because it's 3 mana. Like 3 mana to just deal 3 doesn't deal with enough in the format, and it certainly doesn't deal with it enough in the sense of like it doesn't really let me double spell when I'm aggressive. It doesn't help me when I'm playing a blue-red control deck and I want to hold off my opponent's forces. Like, just not a huge fan of Surge.
You clearly haven't blown up enough globes and monuments then. Something.
I have not, but I stand by it. I think
I hear. I agree.
I think Shock Brigade
is.
Molten Exhale is miles better. Shock Brigade.
Shock Brigade's better also. Yeah, I think we're probably in a similar place on the card.
Yeah. So, if you had taken Mardu Devotee, this is an easy Shock Brigade as a follow up. I think I would take Sibsig Appraiser in your spot here after taking Surveyor.
I think that's not crazy. I took Kishla Skimmer because I was on my, I want to take the best card out of the pack. Mm. And so pack one, pick one, you're on Appraiser over Skimmer.
Yes, I am. I just don't find, like, I like Skimmer. And if I'm blue-green, I'm thrilled to play it. But it's basically a 2-mana 2/2 flyer. I don't find that I trigger it very often.
Yeah, I agree with that. All right, I could be convinced that Sibsig Appraiser's here, the pick here, and that I did it wrong. But that's what I was trying to do, was just do my 6 cards, best card of each pack, take stock. So took the Skimmer over the Sibsig Appraiser, maybe incorrectly. Pack 1, pick 3, things start getting a little more interesting. There's Scoured Barrens, White Black Land. There's a Teemer Tawnyback, the 4/3 Tubrid. There's a Piercing Exhale, one in a green for the... Bite spell, deals damage equal to power to target creature planeswalker, and then if it was a dragon that you behold, you surveil 2. There's a Stormplane Detainment, the white O-ring that we've been talking about, and then Teemer Monument. I think nothing else really in consideration.
Yeah, I like taking Detainment here, I think. It's an interesting...
Far and away the best card in the pack.
Yes. If I had taken Appraiser, I wonder if I'd be tempted by Teemer Monument here. But the Sinkhole Surveyor being in the pile, I like having the white card because then you have a black and a white card and they can go in the same deck and go in either. Hard to find. I think you're probably not. It's interesting because you're probably not going to find your way into Mardu from this start. Like maybe black, white, splash, red. But you're more likely to find your way into Abzan.
With yes, like thinking I think about, so.
Can I get Surveyor and Detainment in the same pack? Or in the same deck, rather.
Yeah, I think you could. But that's the way to do it. All right, pack one, pick four. See the following cards as options after taking the Detainment there. So you've got Surveyor, Skimmer, Detainment. Surveyor probably should have been a Sibsig Appraiser. There's Jeskai Devotee. There's Abzan Devotee running around. A couple more devotees cutting it up. And then in the uncommons, there's Hardened Tactician. One white black for a 2/4 human warrior. And you can pay one, sacrifice a token, draw a card. There's also Duty Beyond Death, which I did consider, but ultimately decided, this isn't a very aggressive looking start. Duty Beyond Death is the one in a white. Sack a creature. Creatures you control get indestructible, and you put a +1/+1 counter on each creature you control.
Yeah. I'm in for the Tactician pick here. It is interesting how, like, if you take Mardu Devotee first, this draft isn't interesting. Right?
So when you go, if you take Mardu Devotee first, you take Devotee, Shock Brigade, Detainment, and then you take Jeskai Devotee here.
I think you're supposed to take Duty Beyond Death for Mardu.
Really?
Or for Boros. Yeah. I think Duty Beyond Death is excellent for Boros. It's way more unique than Jeskai Devotee is. It's such a good go wide payoff.
That's interesting. I think I would take Jeskai Devotee there. But I also have not been particularly impressed by Duty Beyond Death, but maybe wrongly so. But anyway, took the Hardened Tactician here. But yeah, it looks like you can have a clear Boros route to the draft if you start with Mardu Devotee, which is again why maybe you don't like, that's what we said with Sinkhole Surveyor. It's tough starting black because then you get pigeonholed into wanting to draft more black, which is not
it's just so hard. Like, I mean, you're seeing black cards, but it's so hard to get deep into black without rares or without it hitting you over the head, you know?
Sure. Yeah, but I mean, Hardened Tactician that we just picked up does play amazingly well with Sinkhole Surveyor. I mean, you build your own.
Yeah.
Skull Clamp, not quite, but something like that.
Build your own Howling Mine, right?
There you go, yeah. Pick five, pick up a Mardu Devotee out of a largely empty pack.
Yeah.
Pick six, grab a Nomad Outpost, which is the Mardu land over Ossius Exhale for the reasons you were talking about. I was like, all right, maybe I can be white, black, splash some red cards, whatever. And then pick seven, grab a Stalwart Successor out of a pack that has no white. Really no red to speak of. There's a Meticulous Artisan. So Stalwart Successor is the one black green 3/2 menace, and whenever it puts counters on a creature you control for the first time, you get an additional +1/+1 counter on that creature, and then that ultimately wield an Abzan Devotee. And then the thing that solidified me into Abzan, or like a counters thing, was pack 2 pick 1. I opened Inevitable Defeat. Took that, pack 2, pick 2. I got past Baron Step Siege, which is the siege that puts counters on your team at the beginning of the end step. And then pack 2, pick 3, you got past Carcy Revenant, which is just absurd.
This run of black cards in pack 2 is wild.
Basically Abzan Rares splashing the Inevitable Defeat. And the Abzan Rares were quite good in tandem with a Stalwart Successor. It was a cool deck.
And you got to, I want to see, did you... You didn't put the combo in your deck. The Carcy Revenant +100 battle veteran. Because Carcy Revenant dumps three counters on a thing. You dump the three counters on the 100 battle veteran, and it's a 6/6.
And it's a 6/6. Yeah, did not play the Wombo combo. Didn't see the Wombo combo, to be fair, but I'm embarrassed to say that I was championing 100 battle veteran in the pre-format days.
Yeah, I mean, you get hooked up this draft. That's awesome. And then you open Felothar, pack 3, pick 1.
Yeah, it was a cool deck.
Yeah.
Very fun to play.
It's really nice. But how would you describe, I don't know, like how this deck plays out? Because you're not pressuring early. I mean, I guess you could. You have Descendant of Storms, Mardu Devotee in the 1 drop, triple Abzan Devotee, and Sinkhole Surveyor in the 2 drop.
I just was playing better cards on curve than my opponent. Like the games that started with Sinkhole Surveyor in negotiations were trivially easy. Like that curve is insane. A lot of times Abzan Devotee in negotiations put me ahead, and then, you know, like your curve, I did draw my rares a lot. Like I Surveyor, Carcy Revenant, Felothar, Baron Step Siege, Clarion Conqueror, and Inevitable Defeat. All were not shy. Like I had six good rares and I drew them a bunch. Mm-hmm. That's how the deck won.
But I mean, this is best of one. So like you drew them a bunch over 8 games. So like
there were several games that stalled out, and Stalwart Successor or Baron's Depth Siege plus Stalwart Successor were enough to single-handedly carry. It was also a really nice micro synergy with the Successor and the Revenant. Like whenever I embalmed the Revenant out of the graveyard, you get a +1/+1 counter. Clarion Conqueror did some work, shut down some Dragonstorm Globes.
Stalwart Successor with Aggressive Negotiations. Yeah, you're putting
two counters on. Yeah, and the one I splashed a Snakeskin Veil, which was clutch. Like I played that was actually how the game is played out. I got ahead now that I'm revisiting this. Got ahead with getting on board with a 2-drop into Negotiations, and then frequently once I was ahead, was able to hold up Snakeskin Veil or Purging Stormbrood, which is the black white uncommon that was outstanding here. It giving +2/+2 lifelink hexproof. That was actually how I won the majority of games, was playing that in a key spot, either to ramp my life back up when the opponent wasn't expecting it after I had giant things from counters, or countering a removal spell on a thing that was already a threat.
Interesting.
But I did also draw my rares a lot.
Yeah. Well, when you have 6 of them, it's hard not to.
Best thing about this format for me has been the journey from loathing it to getting to the point where I really, really like it and appreciate it. I think this has been a cool journey. I've enjoyed Tarkir Dragonstorm. I was talking about it like it's largely done already, but
no, we got some time.
It's tough format. We do have some time. We have like a whole month already before Final Fantasy, right?
I think I think scheduling wise, I think we only have two episodes before 50 takes after this. But I want to just, before we sign off here, underline the big takeaway, which I think is reading signals in this format is about seeing what's not there. And it's less about seeing what's, ooh, there's a thing for me to take pick 6, pick 7 versus recognizing what's drying up and what that means for where you should go.
Right. Yeah. Like either, like you said, you've hit a power level threshold and you're going to force from that point, from hitting that power level threshold, or, okay, I can't get into dragons. Can I get into team or mid range? I can't get into team or mid range. Can I do blue, red, whatever? Like following that decision tree has been largely how I've been approaching the drafts.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Great place to wrap us up. Thank you, as always, to Salty Pretzels for our intro and outro music. Make sure you give it a listen.
You can find all of our content on our website, lordsoflimited.com. Links to our Patreon page, our merch, our YouTube channel, our Twitch streams, respectively, our episode backlog, and our tier list, all available on our website.
If you've got any feedback about the show, shoot us an email at lordsoflimited@gmail.com.
Thanks so much for listening, and we'll catch you next week for another episode of Lords of Limited.
Thanks, everybody. See you later.